Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 171st edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Brenda Viola. She's an 18-year-old who's finishing up her senior year at Deering High School. Her life started in South Sudan and wound through Kenya and Massachusetts before arriving in Portland, Maine as a seventh grader. She's now a community leader and a young woman on a powerful upward trajectory. Brenda is a pleasure to have, and it's really fun to have you in the studio with us this morning.
Thank you.
And it's part of our week-long celebration of women here at WMPG. This is Women's History Month, but it's also the UN Day for Women's Rights and International Peace. So, welcome.
Thank you.
So, you were born in South Sudan. Do you remember anything of that place?
No, really. I kind of, like, left when I was, like, a kid. Like, I was, like, a baby. So, during the war, my parents had to take me out of the country to be safe. So, I pretty much don't know anything about Sudan because I was a baby during that time. So I don't know. I never been there. I grew up in Kenya. So
yeah,
not really.
And what was life like in Kenya?
In my experience, it's not like easy life growing up. Like as a kid growing up in Kenya refugee camp, it's like really just like you don't know what's your next meal coming from. Like you don't know anything what might happen. So I was just lucky enough to get out in that situation as a kid growing up. It's just too much. Just the stuff that I seen, it's just like still kind of like dream about them today. Seeing a lot of people starving, and I hate that to see a lot of people just dying in my eyes, just see them, just too much.
You've seen so much suffering.
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that I really wish I don't want to see it. I don't want to see a lot of people suffer.
So you were at a camp called Kakuma.
Yeah.
And there are 147,000 people that
yes.
live at Kakuma.
Mm-hmm.
Where are those people from?
Well, a lot of some people are from Somalia, Uganda, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. Those are people who came from the countries where there's a lot of war happening, and they just want to leave their home country so they can be in somewhere safe. That's why a lot of people end up to be in Kakuma refugee camp.
Yeah. And how long do you think people stay there on average?
Well, it depends. Like for me, I stay there like in refugee camp like 9 years. Some people usually stay for like 14 years, 15 years. So it just depends.
I think it's hard to imagine Kakuma. I went online and looked it up. It's a UNHCR yeah. refugee camp.
Yeah.
It looks like sheds. They look like tin roof and tin sides.
Mm-hmm.
Are they four sides on the shelters?
Well, for
or is
me,
it three-sided dwellings, the well, houses.
It's just I don't know now though. Like now, like back when I was there. Most of like the houses was not really look like a house. It's just like you need a shelter where you can stay in. So like now I don't know how it looks like because
I don't think it looks too different.
Yeah,
they are really shelters and kind of shanties with just some shelter from the sun because it gets up in over 100 degrees for a couple months
hot.
At a time.
Yeah, really. Just mostly a lot of people just want a shelter. They want a place where they can keep. Put their kids safe, and if like they have that kind of like tents, they just kind of like trying to survive. That's like surviving way.
That's a really tough life
in
there. And of course, you're not coming having had a great time. You're coming after being shocked by war, death of loved ones, long, dangerous travels with great big losses along the way, and then you get to this place where I guess you're safe. Do you feel pretty safe inside the camp?
Not really, because, like, there's a lot of, you know, stuff still going on. Mostly, like, a lot of people from that country, Kenya, like, they don't want refugees. And mostly a lot of also war happening, a lot of people killing each other, and you kind of like, it's hard to trust who's your who's you could try. It's hard to trust that person like next to you. You're like, are they really gonna hurt me? It's just really, I don't, harder. Like for me, it's just like, for me, I'm able to find people who are really good people, but there's some people who really have to face trauma, have to face a lot of struggle they've seen, and then that kind of like, there's not a lot of medical condition to able to help those people, and you know, just harder.
So there's not enough medical resources to treat people, and there really aren't enough schools to go around for all the children there.
Yeah, because like, mostly this is schools, but you have to pay. And if you're a parent who don't have like your food, that's kind of school. That's mean your kids can go to the school.
You have to pay for school inside a refugee camp?
There's no, not inside a refugee camp. There's kind of like school provided there, but it's not really like really good school. So mostly a lot of kids like, they go to school in and out. Like for example, me, I was like, go to school. Sometimes I don't go to school. I have to like help my mom. And it's just a lot of kids doing that. They don't have like time to go to school, and
so can you tell us, when you had to stay home and you couldn't go to school because you needed to help your mom, what kinds of things were you doing during the day?
Mostly like probably helping my mom, because mostly we kind of like don't have a lot of resources like to find food. You don't know where your next meal will come from, so mostly I kind of like help my mom to grow, to build a farm, like farm to grow food. Yeah, mostly
little farm space.
Yeah, we can like spend pretty much a lot of time doing that, and that time like I didn't have time to go to school, so.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you go outside of the refugee camp and just make a little plot.
Yeah, you can make your own little plot and then grow your own stuff.
What kinds of things were you growing?
Mostly we grow corns and some. I don't remember. Like I was a kid. So, but mostly a lot of corns, we grow them, and then sometimes give it to the people. Like, my mom also give it to the people who really need it. And a lot of people usually starve. You see a lot of people starving, and mostly a lot of people just come to you and beg you for food. And we sort of, like, grow a lot of corns, and then when someone wants it, they can take it.
You have enough to share.
Yeah, we just like, you know, sharing.
That's a position of great power. You know, if you're starving and you can help someone, that's
true.
Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of food allotment within the camp? My understanding from reading City of Thorns is you get a little card and you get some basic grains and things, but it's not enough to live on.
No, like United Nations usually kind of like provide a lot of food, but only give you in months, and then they're gone, and then until waited, they have like, you have to wait until next month. And mostly, it's just like not enough that really can help. If you have like a big family, that's really won't help. So it's not really enough food, you know.
So a 1 monthly allotment is what you get.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So why did your family leave Sudan, South Sudan?
So my family had to leave my home, South Sudan, because like war been happening and still going on today. Like there's no solution to it. And my parents have to just leave for, to just put us on, she want, my mom wanted to put us on safety. Like she wanted us to be in a place where we feel safe. And that's how she had to get out of her country, because I lost a lot of my relatives and my grandparents, my father. So she just like wanted a place where I could feel safe. Yeah.
It's a really brave act to have so much loss and to take your two little girls and go live in a refugee camp. And just, she had no idea what her future would look like.
Not really.
Wow.
Just surviving.
Only 1% of refugees get resettled.
Yeah.
So when you say you were lucky.
I'm lucky.
Big time lucky. Right?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough. It's just like a miracle.
Yeah.
Everything just happened. Just say, thank God it happens. Yeah. Just, yeah.
So, do you have hopes that the conflicts will end in South Sudan?
Well, I wish a lot of people, you know, come together as a country, like come together as a people and solve the problems. Because Sudan, South Sudan is like a lot of tribes, different people from different countries. And mostly it's harder. Everyone want a power. Each person want a power. A different tribe want a power. And that's the problem. We need us to come as like one country and solve the problem and become one nation. And that's the problem. I feel like we need to come together as a people.
It's a big concept change from your local people you trust to trusting across different backgrounds.
Yeah, it's just harder to bring that solution to sit and then talk about it when people don't trust each other. It's just not easy.
No, it's not. It's really tricky. It takes time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it takes time.
So you ended up, when you were in this refugee camp, being exposed to people from many other countries and learning many other languages.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the languages you picked up while you were hanging out with kids from all over the
countries
in Africa?
Well, I kind of like have friends from different countries. So I have friends Somalians, and I learned Somali with them. Ethiopians, and I learned Ethiopian. They kind of like speak. We speak the same. They always talk to me with their language that time because we didn't know what to communicate. And then they kind of like respond to that language. And I'd be like, what's that means? And then they'd be like, well, it means this. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how I kind of like pick up those languages, because I learned from them. And for me, learning Swahili, Somali, Kiganda, and Arabic, I know a little bit because I was like, you know, in and out, like just like not really like I was not focusing on it. But it's just like listening. I do listen Arabic, but speaking is just harder. I do understand when they're speaking.
Yeah,
which is so interesting.
That's the first way, isn't it? You start to understand what they're saying before you can read and write.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So what was life like for the women in the camp when your family lived there? Do you recall if they ever celebrated the International Women's Day at your UN camp?
No, really. No, because, you know, like in southern countries, like African countries, mostly we don't have something that called Women's Day, because a lot of women are pretty much like focusing on saving their kids, surviving, and you know, like that time, women don't really have that enough power to be like, yeah, we're women, let's celebrate Women's Day. Mostly, you know, men always show the men, they're the one who is stronger, they're the one can do this. So women mostly are put down.
There's a big power differential, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you arrived in the United States in 2012 and then came to Maine in 2013 as a seventh grader.
Yeah.
And I was sad when you told me that the other kids used to tell you to, you know, go back to Africa. And I wonder if you could tell us what comments like that did to you.
I think it's just because I'm different. The language I speak is different. The accent. I have an accent, of course. And people really, it just depends on people. I don't know how they receive negative stuff, how society just builds stuff, and then they kind of like feel it's true. And for me, if someone told me to go back to Africa, and I'd be like, well, you don't know really why I'm here. You don't know what struggle I came through, like how I get here. So it just, for me, I understand that because they don't know the truth. Like there's a lot of truth out there why a lot of kids like me came here.
Yeah. Does that change their minds when they do find out?
I feel like when we speaking up about it, like using your story, and you just tell them this is the reason I came here, I think that's how they kind of like understand you before judging.
So at this point, where or what do you consider your home to be?
Home. It's just home. It's just harder like to find where you say home. It's just really, it's crazy. It's just harder for me because like I grow up in different places. And for me, like, growing, I don't know anything about Sudan. I don't know. It's harder for me to call home because I don't know anything about that country. And also, growing up in Kenya, just pretty much, like, growing, that kind of country I grew up, like, a surviving way, as a survivor. And coming to America, it's just, like, now I'm kind of, like, feel home, like, feel like home to me, like, feeling safe. And, you know, like, I'm just calling them, all of them home. It's just, I hope my home country feels safe again. Hope like they change stuff. Feel like they could willing to make a difference, I guess. Then I might go back home.
Do you tend to feel safe here in your American home?
Yes, I do.
I'm glad for that.
Thank you.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Brenda Viola, a young woman originally from South Sudan, who is a senior in high school, sorting through her college acceptances and her future as she charts her way. Brenda, you said you used to be shy, and now you are often found doing public speaking. How did you get to be such a strong public speaker?
Well, I was so quiet. Like, I don't know why. It's just like, you know, when I came here, like, I didn't know how to speak. I didn't speak any English. And that kind of, like, put me in that quiet situation and then become shy because I never shy before. So I was really quiet. But since when I moved to Maine, I sort of, like, pick up the English, learning the English. So since when I started speaking English, I didn't want to stop. I didn't, like, want to stop again. Like, I don't want to be quiet anymore. Like, so in that moment, I kind of, like, started speaking up, like using my voice, able to speak to the public and say, you know, my voice matters. I want to speak too. I want y'all people to hear me.
Yeah. We were talking about the kinds of things you saw in the refugee camp, but if you had stood up for people who were being sold into child marriages kind of things, you could have been put in jail. You did not have First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
So you get here, you learn a little English, and you have some protection. You have a lot of things you need to talk about.
Yeah. Now I'm able to use my voice. Voice like I never use it now. I'm able to express what I feel is right.
Yes, indeed. I think we have only just begun to hear from you.
Yeah.
And you have experience using your voice in the International Girls Choir called Pisintu. And you also tell audiences at those venues about your life experiences. Can you tell about how that inspired you to do your senior capstone project and what it is you're working on right now?
Well, it's really, you know, inspired me to speak that, like, to talk about my life experience, because those, like, painful stories that I've been holding for long. And for me to share to the public, it's just, like, so, I feel like there's people who are really willing to listen to you. And then it just, you know, that's kind of like my darkest pain. I've been holding it for long. And for me to do that in senior capstone, like sharing my stories with some of students who are willing to share their stories, putting their story out there, I feel it's just like really good thing to be able to kind of like feel relief again, feel a little bit that, you know, a lot of public students maybe listen to your story and then they understand who you are, because like a lot of kids don't know each other. They just know each other but don't know really story. And then when the public learn about you, they'll be like, wow. Yeah, for me, just like want to put there, it's just like a truth, like truth, like our truth, like this is what we experience as a kid growing up.
Does every student at Deering High School do a capstone project?
Yes.
And so you're going to do videotaping, is that right?
Yes.
And just of immigrants or of all kinds of students that just go to Deering High School?
Every kind of student from different countries.
I see.
Yeah.
So you're going to collect those stories, a little like New Manor Speak, but on video. Who do you hope to see it? How are people going to see this video?
I hope that probably bring difference to the people. Like, there's a lot of positive and negative stuff out there. And I feel like I wish a lot of people understand and listen to our stories. And then they'll be like, yeah, this is the truth we want to know. You know, putting the truth out there, it just kind of like bringing a lot of difference, you know, to our people, to people as immigrants, like able to be fit in, you know, society that don't kind of like labors different stuff. And for me, it's just like I want to be like put there and then people should understand.
You know? So might this be on the web eventually?
Yeah.
If it is, I would love it if I could link to it. And so people could look at the Facebook page and link to that and see your truthful stories and your classmates' stories, the ones that might not get shared otherwise. I would love that.
Sure.
Good luck with that project.
Thank you.
So you commented that you hate seeing suffering and you feel motivated to fix problems that you see. I wonder how that plays out in your life right now with your work and your family and your volunteer work and the awards you're winning. And I wondered if you might like to use that can-do, fix-it energy to apply to your future.
Well, for me, it's just like I hate seeing people, a lot of people suffering because I've been there. I see it, and I don't want to see it when I grow up. That's the part of I said I want to do to make change in my community, to see a lot of people don't suffer what I've been through. I hate it because it just pains me when I see it. It hurts me so bad. I don't want to see it anymore. So I just want to continue this, like, to help people. Because I was being helped by other people, and I just want to give back to my people, like to give back to the people that I feel like this is, you know, I want to bring change, I want to help people. And
you don't seem to discriminate against the people you want to help. I think there are very few high school students that go out and interview and homeless people, but you did that, right?
I did that.
Tell me about your interviewing of homeless people in Portland.
So it's just like kind of like my survey. Like I keep like observing how people react when they see homeless person. So when I say it, and I kind of like, well, why people just, you know, do that? You don't know really that kind of that person went through. So I decided, like, you know, bring a lot of high school students together, and then we kind of like interview homeless people sharing their stories, and then a lot of kids usually, and then it's kind of like started sharing. They're like, you know, I told that homeless people to drink alcohol. That's why they end up to be homeless. And now they're kind of like, when they're, you know, those homeless people deciding sharing their stories, the true stories, why they ended up to be homeless. And then they're like, wow, I didn't even know that those are really reasons that's why they end up to be homeless. So that's how I said, truth is good to put out the real story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not just guess at people's lives.
Guess,
go ahead,
yeah,
and ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you understand homelessness in,
yeah,
a way, a different way.
Yeah.
Having been a refugee for 9 years.
9 years.
Yeah, so did you find that you had some similarities with these people that are homeless in Portland?
I agree. Food. Food was harder, you know, for me when I was a kid growing up. Because I don't know where my next food's coming from. It's just harder for me. So that's why I kind of like decided, you know, cooking for the homeless people, and then just kind of like eat with them together, sharing stories. Yeah, I just feel like connected. Kind of like I feel connected to them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're pretty cool to go out and do that, and kind of fearless. I think having lived through so much, you're not as scared of the what ifs. You already know you can be strong in many situations. So,
well,
you can just put yourself out there.
Well, if you're really passionate about something, nothing will stop you. You're not be like really afraid of something. That's the part of it. I'm passionate about it, and I'm like, I want to do it.
What does your mother think? You know, she was raising a South Sudanese girl in Kenya in a refugee camp, and now she's raising a South Sudanese girl in Portland, Maine, who keeps being on the Portland Press Herald and winning prizes from Hardy Girls Healthy Women, mm-hmm, as community leader.
Yeah.
What does she make of you these days and all the attention
she
you're
just
getting?
You know, she always tell me, just keep going. I'm just gonna stay there. I'm gonna support you, and I'm just gonna be proud of you. Keep pushing.
Yay, yeah. Mom. What a fabulous message.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about your mom?
You know, she always home and then, you know, cook our favorite food, African food. She's just there. It's just like something that really, you know, she doesn't want us to lost. Always bring a culture food. She's
nice.
Like, well, yeah.
What would be the fabulous dinner that your mom would make that would be really home cooking for you?
Well, she usually use like those potatoes and meat and then put a lot of vegetables in it. It's just like really so tasty, and that's the part that always remind me home. Just like every time when I eat, I'm like, yeah.
Is it spicy?
Well, yeah, you put spicy on it, mm-hmm, cause a lot. Ooh, spicy. We eat a lot of spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Way to go. So, Brenda, you are a person who really cares about everyone. It seems your outreach to others both inspires and supports them, and it also helps to connect us all through our shared humanity. I wish you all the best as you head off to college this fall, one of your 6 acceptances, and hope you gain even more skills so that you can help us build an even stronger community.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Brenda has selected for us. Can you tell us about why you chose this song to wrap up, Brenda?
Well, I like this song because it's just like showing a little bit African way of dancing. It just reminds me home too. It's kind of like having fun a little bit. It just, I love it.
This is called Do Like That.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like famous in Africa.
Great.
It's really famous, yeah.
So get out of your chairs and enjoy some African dance music.
Yeah. I feel it in my soul and I know now. I know you. Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. Why you gonna do like that? Why you gonna keep that thing from me? Why you gonna do like that? Why you gonna act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Girl, come feed me, don't be stingy. Why you gonna do like that? No, baby, don't do like that. Oh, I want you to know. See, I like the way you do. And you savvy, do the dance. So you just speak like everything. Go, 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 go. Baby, you know. Say, you got it, no, be small. So be told me love, shake, I get this control. Girl, I like the way you do. Like the way you, I like the way you dance for me. I like the way you bounce for me. Yeah. I like the way you bend like say you want to greet your mommy. You bend like say you want to park your money. Just bend like say you want to kneel for daddy. Just bend like say you don't send anybody. Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' keep that thing from me? Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Baby, don't tell me you don't know that you're beautiful. No, baby, don't do like that. I know you feel it in the bone inside your body. I know you need someone to hold somebody like. I know you want a piece of me, of me. You wanna say my name, so tell me why you don't wanna spit it out. Why you gon' keep that thing from me? Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Baby, don't tell me you don't know that you're beautiful. Don't do like that. Yeah, baby, say, say, if I hold you so tight, cause your type will be ready, yeah. Your smile not ready, yeah. Let me know right now, if you're ready right now, cause your type will be ready, yeah. Your smile not